This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run, 6 o'clock on Wednesday, the 14th of November. I'm Melissa Idris with Joyce Goh and Tan Chung Han this morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, guys. How's it going?
All right.
You? Good.
Yeah, a bit raspy with the voice there, Chung Han. Oh, my God. Did I just call you?
See, there we go. There we go.
Okay. Look,
Here we go. All right. I'm going to get on my soapbox right now. Okay, producer Roshan, correct me if I'm wrong. We have been playing this promo like all week long, right, about how there's a distinction between Khoo Soo Chuang and Tan Chung Han. Am I correct?
I know. No? Look, I know that you're two different people. It was a slip of the tongue. It's 6 o'clock in the morning.
Nope. No slack. No slack given to you, Mel.
So actually, that is a question I get asked quite often, whether you're the same person. Uh-huh. You and Chuang are the same person. But anyway, just to set the record straight, they are two different people, Tan Chung Han and Khoo Soo Chuang. All right, today we have Tan Chung Han in the studio with us. And let's take a quick look at what's coming up in this next hour. What do we have, Han?
All right. So, you know how a lot of people perhaps hate love to hate on the wealthiest 1%, right? But you know, do we even really truly know how rich they are? It might not be what you think.
Okay, interesting. I do love to hate on rich people. It's a favorite, a guilty pleasure of mine. What about, and then we also have a look at whether, you know how people always say, keep your options open? That's a phrase or a saying I hear a lot lately. You know, just keep your options open. But the question is, how long can we keep doing that for? Because sometimes I'm wondering whether it's just better to pick an option and commit.
From the commitment phobic that I am, no.
That's what you say.
Speaking about commitment, do any of you guys do laundry at night? I know whether or not that's correlated to commitment, but do you guys do your laundry at night?
I do, yes.
Okay.
You laundry? Overnight?
Yeah.
Han doesn't do laundry at all.
Well, if you do your laundry at night, you might want to rethink that because it's getting some people divorced.
Oh.
So if you eventually one day, if you guys want to get married, yeah, you might want to rethink doing your laundry at night habit.
Okay. Oh, wow. What a weird connection. Don't do your laundry at night because that could jeopardize your marriage. Mm. We'll tell you more coming up in this next hour. So make sure you stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on Wednesday, the 14th of November. Melissa, Joyce and Han here with you. That was the Rolling Stones with Wild Horses. So we're talking a little bit about rich people, the 1% this morning.
Super rich.
Okay, so not just rich, but super, the alt uber rich. So what do we have with the uber rich this morning?
All right, so I think the question for us to ponder this morning is, could the super rich actually be not as rich as we think, all right? So now this is a discussion about perception here, okay? And how we are at risk of exaggerating the effects of something that worries us, okay? So the study at the heart of this discussion is called the Perils of Perception. The Perils of Perception studies that's done by Ipsos. Ipsos is this global market research and a consulting firm that's based over there in France, all right? So you know, making that distinction or trying to bridge that disconnect between the fact, okay, reality and our perception. So I'll give you an example. So the fact is, the top 1% of the wealthiest people in the world own more than the rest of the 99% combined, okay? So 1%, they own more than the 99% combined. But sometimes when it comes to the perception of things, and in this Perils of Perception study, turns out that the survey respondents actually guessed. Well, their guesses were way off.
Okay, so they over-exaggerated in their minds how rich the 1% actually
are. Yeah, either over-exaggerated or under-exaggerated. This is when they were asked to guess how much the 1% really had. Yeah.
So in my head, you know, the 1% have golden toilet bowls and, you know, bathe in Evian water, spring water. And is that not how the rich live?
Yeah, well, perhaps, and you look at all those stories about, you know, all those yachts and all those extravagant parties. Sure, right?
Yeah, because we've seen that.
We've read that as well.
With Joe Lo, right? With equanimity, we've seen that it has a helipad and whatnot.
Sure, yeah. Now, so it's about asking each country, you know, their tolerance levels for the wealthy, how much much should they have? And firstly, how much you think they have? Then how much they should have? And then ultimately, then how does it translate into policy, right? So I'll give you some examples here in terms of how way off they were. So when you look at some countries that are perhaps richer or less corrupt, like, you know, France, Australia, New Zealand, etc., they can be way off by anywhere from 20 to 36 percentage points. What does that mean? So if, let's say, in Britain, the 1% actually owns about a quarter, about 23% of the total country's wealth. But in their minds, in the survey respondents' minds, they were saying now they own up to 60% of the wealth, which is not true.
Okay. Right? All right.
So again, it can be way off. You know, US is like 20 percentage points off.
What does it have to do with how corrupt a country is? So let's say, so you're saying all these countries are, say, more developed economies.
Right.
So they're off the mark when guessing how much the rich, how much the 1% have.
By overstating.
Okay. And then
so for countries like Brazil, India, Russia, they were understating it by up to 17 to 20 percentage points, right? So in other words, like, they think these rich people have a certain amount of money, but really they got a lot more. Yeah. But still, there is this mismatch between the reality and the perception here.
Could it be because in those countries, the rich do not flaunt it as much because for certain reasons, I'm not sure, like they kind of play it down? That they're rich.
Well,
they don't want it to be too out there with
maybe.
Their money.
I mean, just to give you a mind-boggling figure, right? So the richest 1% in Russia, they own 70% of the of the country's wealth.
I think it's more, rather than downplaying it, I think it's easier to get away with it. So because the system is so flawed, you can actually take so much more out of the system compared to the others. And not, you know, it's kind of all under the surface. So the regular folk have no idea just how much money has been taken off the table.
Or how much money you have in, locked up in a room at your home, or how many bags you have.
So bags of suitcases, how many apartments you have in Bukit Bintang. Yeah. Oops, sorry, was that too close?
And in fact, the word flaunt, that's an interesting one, because you know, if you look at perhaps some of these economies where the media is more tightly controlled and you know these acts of corruption are not exposed, you know, that could lend itself to the perception. Again, that's a key word here for this discussion. Perception of these folks understating how much wealth the 1% controls.
Right, so why is it important that we know exactly how much... how much the rich have. Like, why is it important that we need the perception to match up with what reality is?
Right. So firstly, we have to understand, because a lot of the discussions that we have around inequality, for example, or basically anything that troubles you, at the heart of this study, they're saying that, look, if something is troubling you, there's this phenomenon called emotional innumeracy. So if
Innumeracy. Okay.
I-N-N. That? Yeah. So in other words, like if it's something that troubles you, be it corruption, crime, inequality, you know, anything that troubles you, your instinct is to overemphasize or over-exaggerate the effects of that thing. So like, you know, a crime is a great example, you know, corruption, because very often a lot of the indices that are cited by public officials are based on perception.
Crime perception index, right?
Yeah.
And that's always like this vicious cycle, because the more, say, anti-corruption measures are taken, you know, the more that people are charged in court, the more that you've got people convicted, the more you think there's a lot more corruption happening, there's a lot more crime happening. But then when you see the perception, the crime perception index going down, you're like, but then I feel like there's more crime happening as opposed to what the index is telling me.
There we go. And this is the pertinent conversation for us here in this Malaysia Baru, because obviously we're seeing policymakers having to adjust to public pressures, right? Be it in education, security, you know, income inequality, etc., right? So while they may have hard facts that point in one direction, maybe, right? But they also have to counter the public perception. So for example, I mean, Mazli Malik, you know, a poor guy, he's been getting a lot of flack, right?
You're very generous.
So now, using this basis to kind of frame our discussion, so are we, now, if let's say education or the lack of quality in public education is worrying you, are we then at risk of emotional innumeracy? Are we perhaps overstating the lack in quality of public education?
Huh.
Yeah. It just makes us think, you know, things differently, you know, because, you know, this is a worldwide study and it's a global phenomenon.
Yeah, but you can also see that from the... the output, right? The results of the local education.
Sure.
We can see graduates coming out from the local system, and then why are they not getting jobs? Could it be because some employers are saying it's because of the language that also trickles down to because of the education that we are getting in schools?
And see, there we go, right? So that's an example. So why aren't we focusing on those who graduate from public schools who actually go on to do well? Mm. See, emotional innumeracy. Again, I'm not justifying Mazli Malay here.
The unemployment among graduates now is a lot higher than, I don't know. But yeah, you have a point.
Well, tell us what you think. Join the conversation. Our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. We're listening. After this, we're going to be looking at how Netflix watching habits can give us some life lessons. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 622. Right now, you're listening to The Morning Run with Joyce, Mel and Hun this morning. That was Luna by Bombay Bicycle Club. Thanks for your messages this morning. We have a tweet from Nick Hasudin, who is a wonderfully loyal listener and a loyal tweeter to us this morning. We have his comments on the issue of perception. So talking about whether we overestimate the wealth of the 1%. Nick Hasudin says that perception is beyond news bites, usually built over time based on experience and observation. Losses resulting from corruption is real and is now reflected by the financial constraints as reflected in the recent budget.
Yeah, you know, and Nick, what you're saying there actually ties in with the study by Ipsos there, where the perception is built up over time. So you've got underlying biases. I think what this discussion was meant to do was highlight that, hey, there are these very strong biases that sway the discussion one way or the other. And are we then at risk of overcompensating for a problem?
Meaning sometimes the pendulum swings too far. Mm. But keep those messages coming. If I could reiterate our WhatsApp number, 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. You too can have your messages read out on air. Just make sure you give us your name so we can credit the message to you. All right. I love commencement speeches. So when I was thinking about some of the commencement speeches that have stayed with me, one of the recent ones has been the class of 2018 commencement speech in Harvard. And it was given by this law student, Pete Davis. And what I thought was interesting was in this speech, he talked a little bit about what his Netflix watching habits have taught him about life. Here he is.
I'm sure many of you have had this experience. It's late at night, and you start browsing Netflix looking for something to watch. You scroll through different titles, you even read a few reviews, but you just can't commit to watching any given movie. Suddenly it's been 30 minutes and you're still stuck in infinite browsing mode. So you just give up. You're too tired to watch anything now, so you cut your losses and fall asleep. I've come to believe that this is the defining characteristic of our generation. Let's call it keeping our options open. There's this philosopher, Zygmunt Bauman. He calls it liquid modernity. We never want to commit to any one identity or place or community, so we remain like liquid in a state that can adapt to fit any future shape. Liquid modernity is infinite browsing mode, but for everything in our lives. But I leave believing that the most radical act we can take is to make a commitment to a particular thing, to a place, to a profession, to a cause, to a community, to a person. To show our love for something by working at it for a long time, and to close doors and forego options for its sake.
So that was the class of 2018 commencement speech from Harvard. And I love that, particularly because I think this resonated with me for many reasons. But the idea of that, you know, there's this Netflix, the infinite browsing mode is something that I particularly resonated with me, because I've done that, right? You spend ages just browsing through the list before trying to decide on something, and I never do. And in the end, I end up watching something I've watched before, you know, reruns of Friends or The Office or whatever. But the idea is to just commit something. And the way he ends it, Pete Davis, that is the valedictorian, he says in this speech, which you didn't hear in the clip, he said that we need to have time to do the slow but necessary work of turning visions into projects, values into practices, and strangers into neighbors.
Right.
And I love that idea that, you know what? Forget the fear of missing out. Forget FOMO. Pick something and do it well.
Right, sure. Now, again, being the commitment phobe that I am, and I guess I'm not ashamed to say it because I just said it on air, right?
Look, own it, hon.
Yeah, no, right. So, I mean, I think those values can still be manifested, but perhaps not in as long term, or not using a long term timeline,
okay,
as opposed to doing it in short bursts, right? So, again, for example, you know, I lived in several countries, worked in a couple of states in the US, and every time I move, I was able to then engage in these things, right? So making strangers neighbors. What were the other two?
Turning visions into projects,
yeah.
So, values into practices.
Yeah, you know, because now that's a rewriting of what we actually, you know, aspire to in life, right? It's say, you know, rewriting of marriage, what marriage actually is. You know, is cohabitation less taboo now? What does a family really mean? Is it just blood relatives or, you know, individuals whom you feel a close kinship with?
But is that keeping your options open? Is that, does it fall into the category of keeping your options open because you never know something better might come along, and it's all part of this fear of missing out culture?
And you know, as opposed to right now, there's this joy of missing out.
Jomo.
There's a new term of whether you should opt for joy of missing out. So yeah, I agree that to a certain extent, it kind of reveals in this day and age that where we are, you know, when it comes to technology and all that, you have so many options out there. And I'm not just talking about dating. I mean, even for jobs, you know, you see like there's LinkedIn and all that. Suddenly you get this request and they're like, oh, your CV's out there, basically compared to what it was before LinkedIn. And also committing to something like basically in the speech, he's saying that, you know, committing to a career.
Right.
Yes. And you see young people there, they switch jobs, even switch careers. This is not working out, like less than 2 years in, they jump. But could it be the norm today?
Right.
Because of, given how easy it is.
So the question is that, I mean, has commitment become the counterculture, right? So has, you know, buying a house and setting down roots, has marriage become the counterculture? Job loyalty become the counterculture?
Right. Well, I wouldn't quite say it's counterculture yet, but its prevalence is waning, right? Mm. So its prevalence is waning, and perhaps these shorter term commitments or these non-committal attitudes are gaining more prevalence, right? So there's an
non-committal
erosion.
Attitudes, yeah. I like that.
So,
yes.
So there's an erosion there. I wouldn't quite say that commitment is wrong, but then I think at the heart of this is committing to something long-term better? And if we're going to frame it that way, I would say not really. Right?
Oh, well,
is committing to something long-term better? No.
Well, not necessarily. It may not be bad. I mean, that could be the view right now, that because you have so many options, committing to a long-term something could limit your options. You know, because you're scared of missing out, as Mel was saying, right? Because you want to keep your options open in case something better comes along. And if you commit to something long-term, that might, in the case, you miss out now.
Well, tell us what you think. We would love to hear from you. 018-789-8899. We've got the 6:30 News Bulletin coming up next with Sabrina Magdalene. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. It's coming up to 40 minutes past 6 o'clock on Wednesday, the 14th of November. I'm Melissa Idris with Tan Chung Han and Joyce Goh this morning. Bruce Springsteen there with I'm on Fire. We have a message from Ben who said, thank you so much for sharing the Harvard commencement speech. He's going to look it up. And he says that, I was born in 1987, never had a Facebook account, never felt I was missing out, took the long way around to keeping touch and keeping relationships going. So he still writes letters and he says that it's hard work, it's harder work, but I guess it takes commitment, he says. Thank you so much for that message, Ben.
But then wouldn't it be easier if you had a Facebook account?
No. See, I don't have a Facebook.
A Facebook account, Mel?
I do. I had one for work, but I've dismantled it for now. But Yeah,
that's dismantled. Wow,
so much anger behind the word.
Deactivated. I dismantled my social media presence.
You can tell that I've got a bone to pick with Facebook. I also want to give a shout out to Ramli Sirap, or Cunning Cyclist, his handle on Twitter, who tweeted in saying, "I can't believe it took a Harvard grad to help me to commit to a show on Netflix." Come on, we all have done that, right? We've all been browsing in the infinite browsing mode, and then we cannot commit, so we end up watching something we've watched a million times before. Well, keep those messages coming in. 018-789-8899 is the number to WhatsApp into, or to tweet us at BFM Radio. We're taking a look at divorce now.
Yeah, so recent news has it that, you know, loud snoring spouses, wives who go on rombongan with their friends often, and women who do their laundry at night, these were among the reasons cited for divorce among newlyweds. And this came out recently. And, you know, the whole list, these are some of the reasons, but there are also others like suami tidak suka istri makan dalam kereta. There's also pasangan lupa pam tandas. And also, there's also berubut rancangan television. That could be rancangan Netflix for all we know,
so it
right?
could be like your infinite browsing mode on Netflix could be a reason for future couples to get divorced. You'll find that. So this is a list that was made public, was it?
Yes, it was made public. And well, a couple of people, I think Fahmi Fazil actually tweeted that, and Hannah Yeo was quoted in the news talking about this. So Hannah Yeo is the Deputy Women, Family and Community Development Minister, and she said that, you know, citing these reasons, she said that some of these reasons were for divorce among couples who have been married for less than 5 years.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's a news report which had quoted the Selangor Sharia Judiciary Department.
All right, okay, so this kind of ties in with our whole theme about commitment and stuff, right? So now, would this be as big a problem if it didn't happen in the confines of a marriage?
What do you mean?
If someone broke up
because you're doing laundry in the middle of the night. Yes, I think it's... let me rephrase that. I don't think it'll be as big a deal, because I think there's something about the bonds of marriage that perhaps require longer commitment, right? There's something about that, you know, the commitment that you've made to someone in marriage that I'm hoping will transcend doing laundry at night. I think for me, what we need to kind of look at here is the underlying reasons, right? So this is, again, coming back to that theme that we were talking about, keeping your options open. Mm-hmm. Because we have so many options, is it just easier then to use any lame excuse to call off a commitment?
Yeah, and also this also brings up the point as to whether or not, before they get into a commitment, are they aware of what you're getting into, and whether or not there should be more classes. You know, when it comes to premarital classes, should there be more, I guess, realistic classes and subjects to be thought in to be learned in these lessons, premarital classes that we attend, that people do attend before they get married? Because looking at these statistics, the reasons for divorce can range from a lot of other reasons, like anak demam dan tidak sehat. Could be a reason for the divorce.
Right. I mean, so, or, again, the question is or does the concept of marriage have to be redefined, right? So going back to the options that you have now, because of, I guess, for lack of better terms, I'll use the same term I used earlier, right? These non-committal attitudes that society fosters around us, is that seeping into the context of marriage as well, you know, whereby you are afforded the kind of options or opportunities to be less committal, you know? So is marriage even something to be is marriage even something that we should all strive towards, right?
Yeah, okay, so I think beyond that, right, so that's a personal choice, and I think at the end of this the crux of this story is it's all about personal, it's all relative, it's how much it means to you. If marriage is important to you, then, you know, that is your choice.
Yeah,
and it's relative how much snoring bothers someone. Is that a deal breaker for some people, right?
And can you work that out? Whether or not, you know, I know some people really can't sleep if their partner is snoring. So can you work that out, or do you need to break up or get a divorce because of that?
Well, I'm thinking, I'm reading this list, right? I'm thinking that those instances or those reasons cited may just be the camel that broke the straw that broke the camel's back. Yeah, you know, right? But I'm sure there are many other underlying issues that perhaps culminated in this one seemingly flippant thing like doing laundry at night that actually caused the divorce. So I think there's a lot more to those reasons that were listed on that list.
Yeah, and at the heart of it, I think, is because it's become easy, right?
Yeah,
it's become
yeah.
easy. I mean, it's so much easier now than perhaps, and less taboo,
correct.
I guess, compared to generations previously.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it from a sociological perspective, right? So they cite a plethora of reasons as to why a marriage may not be as long-term, you know, compared to previous generations. So like you mentioned, the legality or the legal options that you have right now, it's a lot easier to file for a legal divorce, one. Society's expectations, you mentioned, they're taboo. And then something else, you know, women now also have more options whereby you've got greater life chances, greater career
financial
options.
Financial independence,
mm-hmm. yeah. You know, so the role of marriage, you know, the role of marriage in previous generations versus the role of marriage now is different. It's different. And so that may lead to some of these seemingly non-committal acts that we are seeing right now.
Yeah, it just shows that today, whether when it comes to the work commitment, just how committed are people to a relationship or to a marriage or to a job? It kind of shifted, I think, when it comes to the meaning of commitment. So coming to back to this list on the reasons for divorce, I guess the flip side of this could also be what makes a lasting marriage.
I don't have the answer to that. Joyce, you're the only one who's married in this room.
No, but I guess in this case, you know, whether or not is it trying to work it out together? You know, is it a two-way street, you know, compromising, you know, giving and taking? I feel, I don't know. I mean, I'm definitely not, I mean, just because I'm married doesn't mean I can give advice
not
on marriage.
Not speaking for all married
yeah,
people.
Yeah.
Or just do your laundry during earthly hours, like godly hours.
Do you know, I remember reading something, an article that said that in 2018, the most common word that came up in divorce proceedings was Facebook.
Really?
So maybe I should dismantle the Facebook.
Dismantle Facebook. Well, if you're single like me, Facebook away.
All right, tell us what you think. Again, we'd love to hear from you. We'll come back and take a look at some of your messages. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 651. That was the Beatles, From Me to You. Thank you for your messages from you to us. I'm Melissa Idris with Tan Chong Han and Joyce Goh. And just want to mention Ro, who's been very cheeky this morning, weighing in on that conversation, that list that was tweeted out for some of the reasons that was made public recently for why people get divorced. One of the, I guess, reason cited was doing laundry late at night. And Ro says that I think grounds for divorce in that article left out the fact that perhaps the wife caught the husband secretly doing the neighbor's lingerie at night. He's very naughty, this Ro. Also, I want to say a quick shout out to Raja Segaran, who says on Twitter, some of it are just excuses for deeper problems.
Right.
And I completely agree. And that, one comment that struck me was from a tweet from Mikhail Hafiz, and he says that looking at the list of reasons cited for grounds of divorce, I think some of these people should have never gotten married in the first place because it looks like they weren't mature enough to enter such a partnership. So that's quite an interesting observation. If the reasons are seen to be trivial, then perhaps those individuals were not aware of the commitment or the depth of the commitment or... you know, to use Mikhail's words, perhaps not mature enough.
Yeah.
And what can we as society do? Perhaps, and this is, you know, to all the aunties and uncles out there, perhaps at the next Raya or Chinese New Year, maybe don't pressure the young ones to get religious reasons aside, but perhaps, you know, let mature, like, you know, we all mature at different levels, at different ages. So perhaps let the individual decide when they're ready or mature enough to enter a marriage.
Right, exactly. You know, so if these individuals who apparently divorced because of, you know, someone doing laundry of lingerie late at night,
that's just wrong.
Good God, Ro, what's going through your mind at 6 a.m. in the morning, my friend? All right, you know, so now if they think they are mature enough to go into these marriages, yet they exit so flippantly, right? Well, then they should bear the consequences, right? I mean, The idea that, oh, perhaps there should be this external party that kind of determines who is mature enough or what maturity actually means, that's a very slippery slope. I don't know if I'm going to go down that path.
Well, that's true. But I also think that it can, again, religious reasons aside, I think there is societal pressure that causes young people to jump into the commitment of marriage mm-hmm. without being fully prepared. Also, a quick shout out to Intan Sabrina Muhammad. Thank you for sending the article. She sent a really good article about the stages of marriage and saying that, we know what, BFM should invite experts from the Faculty of Human Ecology who have done numerous studies on marriage and divorces. Bit of a theme going on today about commitment and marriage and keeping your options open. Yeah. Perhaps flowing off the comments from the Prime Minister yesterday asking young people to get married and procreate to avoid having an aging population.
Now, as someone who is nowhere close to the marrying stages, right, I'm reading this article that Intan sent to us.
Could you tell us the stages?
So the five stages of marriage, and this is why I say this, you know, those married people, I'm sorry, you guys are just not making appealing it.
Why?
Okay, so
now I might just give the stages
okay,
first.
Okay, so first one is romance. Mm-hmm. Okay, right, I'll sign up for that. Second one, the disillusionment stage. Uh-oh. Third stage, the power struggle stage. Fourth, the stability stage. And then the fifth one, the commitment stage. Three out of these five do not appeal to me whatsoever. No?
But so, they're just stages. Well, you go through them. You said just now the journey is more important than the destination.
Yeah, but you know, if this is a journey that has to take me through a power struggle and disillusionment, I'm good.
Well,
put me on another path.
To be completely honest with you, I really think that this tweet from Fahmi Fazil is symptomatic of a deeper problem, right? It's a socioeconomic issue, and I think that it reflects something, it says something about the way our society operates, whether the way we're thinking is in line with how society has evolved. The fact that some of these reasons for divorce are so trivial really speaks to me about a wider problem.
Mm. Actually, we have a tweet from That's My Full Name saying, I wouldn't brush off snoring as a silly reason to get divorced. She says that, he says that I roomed with a loud snorer for a 3-week holiday. It was torture. Think motorboat engine. And to escape, I even slept on the kitchen floor of our Airbnb. I will never travel with her again.
Oh, right. Her? It's a woman. I assumed it was a man. That's terribly sexist of me. Yeah. This woman is snoring like a motorboat.
Yeah, man. It's the age of equality that applies to snoring as well.
Yes,
yeah.
Equal opportunity snoring.
Equal snoring opportunity. Yeah.
But yeah, in this case, if your spouse snores, I guess, again, try and work it out. For some people, I know a friend who the husband sleeps in one room and the wife sleeps in another room because the husband snores.
All right, okay. So then we got this WhatsApp that came in from NN, you know, asking about the number of divorce. You know, are there statistics of how they met? And the options given were Facebook, Tinder, online. Now that implies that meeting somebody online is not a viable foundation or a Tinder, if I may use that word, a Tinder for a
nice,
long-lasting
like
romance,
that.
Right?
Good job. Good job, Wan Panhan. We have a message here from Azmil. You know, I just want to mention this. So he says that what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Of course, this is a Nietzsche quote. But really, to kind of go through that commitment, back to that idea of you have to kind of just go through some of these rites of passage, right? So the phases that we talked about.
No, I think also we got to be, you know, be aware of perhaps some socioeconomic reasons for the longevity of marriages that were associated with previous generations, right? Because previous generations, you didn't have the kind of career options. You didn't have the kind of gender equality. You didn't have the kind of life chances that current generations have. So was the longevity of those marriages, those commitments, really an extension of the lack of options?
I don't think so.
You don't think so? No. Or they truly were committed to one another?
No,
really?
I think you're onto something, Han. I think that's one, perhaps the case for some people, maybe
but
not all.
Not
all.
You want
to
divorce, you cannot divorce because you can't afford it.
Okay. All right. Quick message here from Madiha who says, to Melissa, it's not actually even a religious reason. Some people think it's an easy way out to just shut people up or avoid the maxiat comment, but you're not supposed to marry just because of that.
Paul, what stepped in? Marriage is love versus money and forgiveness versus ego.
Okay, on that note, I'm going to hand it over to Sabrina Magdalene for the 7 o'clock news bulletin coming up next on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.